Put Scooter on the phone, you bird brain.
What do you do, backflips? You jump up there in a silly suit? What do you do?
You go, bam! I want you to play that.
Look at us.
Boy, those are two looking guys right there on that screen, man.
I gotta go this way.
Yeah, check it out there, man. Or where are you at? You're over this way. Not that way.
I gotta go like this?
No, just wherever you want to go. Yeah, there you go. All right, man. Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Fast Freddy Rocks Youngstown. And my special guest tonight is Gary Markaski, former lead guitarist of the Michael Stanley Band. And I've been trying to get Gary on for a while. We were finally able to work it out. And Gary, I'm glad to see you here, man.
Isn't it great?
Oh, yeah.
I love you.
Hey, I hate to get you out in the cold, though, like
no,
this.
No, it's okay.
All right. As long as you didn't mind.
Oh, no. I've done this for years.
I hear you.
We're good.
So anyways, we're going to talk a little bit about Youngstown rock history. We're going to start right from the beginning of, your career and how you first picked up a guitar. And then we're going to go right into what you're doing today. And, you know, I think you've had an interesting journey. You've seen a lot, when you're with your band Coconut and the Tomorrow Club days. And of course, your days with the Michael Stanley Band and the big sold out shows at Blossom and the New Year's Eve parties and all the interesting people that you've worked with along the way.
You used to hang from the ceiling.
Yep. We'll talk about working with guys like Mutt Lange and big man Clarence Clemons and everybody else that you've met along the way. And you've actually had a pretty good adventure.
I'm writing a book.
Are you really?
Yes.
Oh, that will be awesome. Well, let's get it started. Now, you're from what, the Cornersburg area of Youngstown? Is that where you grew up?
Well, I grew up on the east side. Sacred Heart.
Uh-huh.
For 2 years. Then we moved to Cornersburg.
Uh-huh.
Is that better?
Yeah, there you go. Get on that, man. You're a record producer. You got to know this stuff.
I understand. Listen, I went to first and second grade at Sacred Heart on the east side. Okay. We lived on Loveless. Okay. Right next to Carl Severino, who's my next door neighbor. You know him.
Carl's a heck of a singer, huh?
Oh, my God. Yes. He's everything, man. He started me, in fact.
Really?
Almost. Yeah. And then Nicky Rorino lived right down the street from the Babylon.
Right. Yeah.
And we all grew up together. And then we moved to the Cornersburg area. Okay.
You know what's crazy about the Carl Severino thing? There's a video out there of Ed O'Neill, Bundy.
Yeah, he talks about Carl.
Yeah, and he said that one of his favorite singers, one of the people that he thought was the best singer in Youngstown was Carl Severino.
Carl's great.
Yeah.
He started me. He made me want to do it.
Is he the guy that...
him and Phil Kagi.
Uh-huh. Okay, so now you moved to Cornersburg.
Cornersburg, okay.
Okay.
Went to St. Christine's.
Yeah.
Then there was me, Myron Grumbacher from Pat Benatar, John Severa from the Glass Harp, Danny Pecchio from the Glass Harp, Phil Kagi. Phil and I used to walk home from school together.
So you guys...
At Canfield Road. He lived right next to the Dairy Queen up there on Glenwood and Canfield.
No kidding.
I lived right before. Yeah, and we used to walk home from school together. And I saw him play like that. He was a monster back then.
Uh-huh.
And I said, my God, I love this. I got to do this.
So that's really where Glass Harp got its start then, too, on the west side.
Oh, yeah.
With those three guys. Oh, yeah. So you guys were all in school together.
Yes. Grade school.
That's insane. Now, did you all share this love of music? And were you talking about these different bands and all that kind of stuff?
Phil was in the Squires. And this is this seventh and eighth grade. Okay. And he was playing down YSU. Okay. He was missing school all the time because he was getting home at 2 a.m.
Uh-huh.
Because that's when the things went.
Right.
They went that long. You know, they flunked him for 1 year. Isn't that crazy?
You know,
one of the best guitar players on the planet.
Now, I got to give his parents credit for letting him do that. So I take it his parents were pretty supportive of his music endeavors.
They were good people. But then, you know, his mother passed away right in that curve on Bez Den in a wreck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then he never really got over that, I don't think.
Now, I know some people that grew up in that neighborhood, and they said when you lived there, you'd be out and about. They said when you got your first guitar, that was it. They said nobody saw you from that point on, and that you went in your room and just started practicing like a madman. Now, is that true?
That's just true. My dad bought us two Hagstroms. Hagstrom's. They're the Swedish guitars from Ducey Music when it was on Dellison, across from South High School. I'm telling you. And my brother and Al and I, we played forever. But Al went to a different point of view. He was building guitars and making them, okay? And he's doing such a great job out in California. Everybody goes to him.
Really?
Carlos Santana, everybody.
No
all
kidding.
Those cats, man. Out in Santa Cruz.
Wow. Yeah,
he's one of the best luthiers on the planet.
No kidding.
Oh, I swear.
Didn't know that.
He's been doing for 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He does them all.
Which is guitar?
Santa Cruz Guitars.
Uh-huh.
Sylvan Music.
Uh-huh.
That's what it is.
And so he's badass with like Carlos and all them guys.
Oh my God, he's the best. But he can play. He plays too and sings and writes. But his game is the other,
uh-huh.
the other side of it. Where I went to the other way. You know,
So what was the first song you learned how to play?
Me?
Yeah.
Little Brown Jug.
Oh yeah.
Little Brown Jug.
And well, of course, from there and then you went on.
I'm just a lonely cowboy.
Uh-huh.
It's the truth.
I believe you. Right. Now, do you have a little songbook?
My dad taught me this.
Oh, okay.
He gave me his first guitar from the war when he gave this guy some money to go out and hang, and he gave him the guitar, and he brought it home. I had it upstairs hanging on my wall.
Uh-huh.
Still to this day.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Now you guys are all hanging out together. And now when you started really getting into music, who was influencing you at this point in time? What was the music you were listening to and albums you were buying and people that were, did the Beatles really light a fire under you
always,
you
Beatles,
know?
Stones, Cream,
uh-huh.
Clapton and that Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
Those are the main cats, man, that I stuck with, you know, but then, you know, others came around, Stevie Ray Vaughan, come on.
Yeah. So you like that blues stuff too. Then you get bluesy.
Really? Right. If you want the truth, I was blues.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. But I went to George Michael and we did another thing. It was like a different flavor.
Yeah.
But guess what? The chemistry was right.
Yeah.
And that's why it happened. That's why we got on the charts and everything.
Right. Now, before we get into that part, so now I'm just fascinated.
Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah. You know, I'm just fascinated about this neighborhood here where you got Danny Pecchio, Myron Grombacher, and Phil Kagi all
played together
uh-huh.
in grade school.
So you guys would jam and stuff like that?
All right. The first band was Allegheny Workhouse. They would turn into a Hard Willow.
Uh-huh.
Then the next thing was Coconut.
Right. Now Coconut, that was a really fun band, boy. When you guys were really at your peak. Now you were a regular fixture at the Tomorrow Club throughout the years.
Every night I had the keys to the place.
Really?
Jack Urchak gave me the keys. We rehearsed there all the time. We opened for everybody that came in. The Police, Kiss, everybody. Kiss didn't have their makeup on or nothing yet. It was, you know,
yeah, that had to be what 75 when they played there. I think it was Halloween 75, if I'm not mistaken, or 74.
Early 70s.
Yeah,
all of us, and we would open all the shows, okay, on Sunday.
Yeah,
yeah, and the place was packed every night. And then we used to do the 99-cent Wednesdays.
I remember that too.
Place was packed all the time. It was great.
Now, for people that didn't see you then, what kind of music were you playing back then? What was like the set list for Coconut back then?
R&B-ish, you know, and then Bee Gees came along, Staying Alive and all that, because the girls wanted to dance. You give them what they want, man.
Yep. Oh, no, that's the key. Even though it was a rock club, you know, and listen, I've done that too, where, you know, I've had to do a lot of gigs, especially, you know, when I first started out on CD 106, when you're playing music, everybody wants to hear Rush or they want to hear this. And all the guys, they're standing around there drinking. And then when there's no girls in there dancing, then they leave to go somewhere else. Right, but they're looking at you like, hey, Fast Freddy, you're on 106 or whatever. You can't be playing this kind of music, you know? And it's like, but then when they're going to look for the girls, then they all leave. And then at midnight, they come back and they start a fight.
You know? Exactly. You know that. Even how long we've been doing it.
Right. Right. So, so you would sit there and keep them girls dancing, because that's an important thing about that. You know, exactly. I remember Ting from the Human Beings one time even told me about that.
We should have brought Ting down here tonight. He's living right up in Portland right now.
Oh man. We got to get him on one time. I should have called him. Ah. So anyways, though, but that's the thing. He said a lot of them guys, some of them bands at the time were doing like heavier, more, you know, what would be considered like what they would call experimental rock and stuff back then. Yeah, right. But then when these guys would play and they're playing these dance tunes and all the girls are in there dancing and stuff, that's where it was at.
That's what the men wanted. That's what the girls wanted too.
Right, right. A lot of people don't realize that's a secret there. You know, you got to keep them girls in the bars if you want to keep playing.
That. We understood it. We packed that place all the time. Every Wednesday, 99 Cent Wednesdays. And every Sunday night, we open for all the big police. Keep going.
Oh, yeah. You know, people don't realize the bands, you know, the younger people don't. I mean, the people our age that were there and experienced, what a great time to be a music fan in Youngstown. I mean, when you got Meatloaf and Tom Petty playing for $2 and Journey, one of my favorites was Journey. Those guys were so good.
No, listen, Neil Sean wanted to buy my Strat. I said, I can't sell you whatever you want for it. That's no. I bought it for $168 at Campfield Music. He was going to pay me $50,000 or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter. I said, no, this is what I did all my songs with and all the recordings.
Right.
I can't.
And you know, what's crazy about that place is it seems like these bands, the timing that Gershock had, or I don't know if it just happened that way. It would seem like these bands would play in downtown Youngstown. And 2 months later, they were the biggest bands in the country.
Exactly. We broke them all. They all came here and broke the ice in America. Yeah, a lot of them from out of over in England and everything.
Yeah. Oh, one of my favorites was when AC/DC opened for Mink DeVille. Yeah. Now, Mink DeVille was like one of the big punk rockers over CBGB and that sort of thing. Right. But that night, AC/DC just blew him out of the water. And, you know, and he's trying to do his set and he wasn't like sucking or anything. I mean, you know, guy's got some albums out there. And people were just like, AC/DC, AC/DC, you know?
Everybody played down there. Oh God.
Rush. How about Rush? They played there like 5-6 times.
Right. Keep going.
Yeah.
Herbie
Judas
Hancock.
Priest, Ellis Cooper, Bob Seger, Joe Walsh.
All of them.
Yeah. I mean,
Joe Walsh and I used to play the Christ Episcopal in Warren.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
In the early early days at the what was it?
Which one? Freak Out, Apartment?
Yeah. All of them.
Yeah.
We played them all. We were all just early. Yeah. Early.
That's another thing.
Put it all together.
You know, that's another thing people don't realize. Like Joe, man, he used to play around here like.
Oh, yeah. Locally. Just like me. All of us. All of us played.
You know, and I remember one time I interviewed Phil Kagi, and he was talking about then when him and Joe would jam like up at JB's in Kent.
Right. Yeah.
And they'd be in there, you know, doing
And we played the Pirate's Cove. With the exit, there's a couple of places here, Kent Stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. We played all those.
What a great time to be a musician, huh?
Unbelievable.
You know, kids.
Thank you, Lord.
Kids today don't realize what they're missing, that a guy like you was able to make a lot of money playing in bands.
Oh, constantly.
You know?
Man, I'd play 264 gigs a year.
Every year. Sometimes two a night, three a day, stuff like that. A teen dance in the afternoon.
Yes.
And that used to be the big thing. Now you're talking about Christ Episcopal in Warren.
Yeah.
People used to love that place. The teen dances back then were just amazing. And you would have guys like you. You'd have guys like Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
And
All of us.
I remember there was one.
Buell Park.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Out in Warren. Sharon.
Yeah.
Keep going. We did a lot of stuff in Sharon. We did it everywhere,
you know, and every, you know, the people of our generation, rock music meant everything to us. It was like a lifestyle. It was like a religion. Our whole life was just focused on rock and roll.
Couldn't wait for the next gig.
Yeah. And when we would have those teen dance, well, right across the street here at the YMCA, we used to have teen dances over there.
Yes, we did.
And I'll tell you, I see some of these, I look back
they
on
were sock hops.
Yeah. And I look back on some of these flyers and stuff, and you look at some of these, it was like maybe 5-6 bands on that bill were signed to record labels.
Yeah, we all.
And they're playing locally here in Youngstown.
We loved it. And we were young then, and we were on fire.
We were
on fire, man.
So what was it, you know, like now with you and Myron and everything, that was just a pretty interesting time. What was in the water there in Cornersburg that made you guys
listen
all so good?
Because we used to go to Cornersburg Pizza and fold 100 boxes and get a slice. We all sat there, a bunch of us, man. John Safer from Class R, Pecky, all of us guys.
So you're in there sitting there pulling pizza boxes.
Yeah, we wanted a slice of pizza. We fought to pull 50 boxes or something.
So where was when was the first time you got on stage and that you've sang in front of somebody or played in front of somebody?
It was St. Dominic's, I think.
Uh-huh.
St. Dominic's. Over there with Gary DePeace. Who else? Oh, my God. It was a sock hop over there at St. Dominic's. I think that was the first. But then we would go down to the Green. Remember the Green?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Myron and I. Then we had our band down there. And he was, you know, we were our first band. We used to practice in my bedroom all night long, banging away. My dad couldn't believe it.
Uh-huh. And your parents, he was supportive of it, too. It wasn't like, because a lot of people back in that day, get a haircut, get a job. That used to be the thing. Where do you think you're going to go with that goddamn guitar, you know?
No, he believed in it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he bought me the guitars.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Oh, that's good. Now, did you take a lot of lessons or did you
I'm self-taught.
Okay. And
we're all self-taught.
And then, you know.
Phil is too. Phil, uh-huh. John, all of us.
And then when you guys would jam, you'd say, hey, listen, I figured out how to do this. Or what's that note there? Or how do you do this? And then you guys just learn from that.
Yeah. But guess what? We didn't learn. We were automatic. Uh-huh. We could hear it right away. All of us had the gift. I'm serious. That's why it went where it went. I mean, Myron and I were best friends. We started the game, you know. And he was the best man at my wedding, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
See, when you say the gift and that ability to hear, you know, every guy that I have down here that is really good, they all say the same thing. Like guy like Jerry Senafani and some of these guys, you could just, it's amazing how you could do that you could just hear this song and you know what notes it is and just where to go.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes. I mean, it's automatic.
You know,
I mean, we don't even think about it. In our sleep, upside down.
You know, because now I've been standing on stage with you, and I'm just watching you play, and it's like, damn, this guy's good, you know? Or I've seen all you guys, you know, whether it's Gizzy or anybody, that you guys could just all jump on stage, and you could just jump into a song and just start like you're right into it.
It's over.
That night we were out with Norman Nardini.
Yeah.
And he calls you up on stage and like you're there for like 2 seconds. And the next thing you know, you're just
tearing it up.
Song, you know? Yeah.
I mean, and God bless Giz, one of the best I've played with. Uh-huh. Him and Derek Young. Derek Young is another one, man. Great.
So now you got you and Myron, and of course we know what happened with Glass Harp. You know, they just blew up.
Oh, yeah.
And with a totally original sound. To this day, they have that unique sound. And then, so now you and Myron are playing around. Now, how did Myron end up with Pat Benatar?
Let me tell you the story. Myron and I went out. We were called by Rick Derringer to come out and rehearse. He was looking for a rhythm guitar player, and he was putting up a new band, okay, and a drummer, and okay. We went up there with the SIR Studios in New York, and we rehearsed and everything, and it was really good, but he had like 40 other people that were on the list, you know. I was too tall for him.
Uh-huh.
even with his boots on.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got back to Youngstown. Okay. Next thing I know, Michael calls me. He said, Jonas, leaving. You want the gig? It's yours. I said, oh, yeah. Because Rick didn't call yet.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
And I said, okay, let's do it.
And then Neil Giraldo.
No, hold on.
Okay.
Then Rick called Myron up to start. Okay. But he wanted a rhythm guitar player too, which was Neil. So Myron called Neil up because we knew Neil. We used to jam down a jam sound over there on Market Street, 5900.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
Okay. And that's what happened. Neil went up and rehearsed, you know, and he was short enough.
Yeah.
I love Neil. Don't get me wrong, man.
Yeah.
And Patty. I love them both. Yeah. We're good friends.
Yeah.
But Neil went on and he got aboard. Okay. And I went with Michael Stanley.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Oh, that's pretty crazy.
That's the story.
And so him and Myron, and then they met Pat Benatar from there. So
anyway, yeah, but there was a falling out, I think, with Rick and Neil.
Uh-huh.
And that's where he met Pat at Catch a Rising Star. She was doing just a solo thing by herself.
Uh-huh.
And Neil fell in love, I guess. And they started their band. He left Rick, okay?
Yeah. And you're connected with all this stuff. Oh, yeah. You're all a part of the story here.
We're all family.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Northeast Ohio is really crazy when it comes to that. So, you know, you've worked with Joe and Joe Vitale guys. Well, you did an all-star thing, Northeast Ohio All-Stars, didn't you?
Yeah.
Him and Joe?
We did a lot of them.
Yeah.
We still talk.
Yeah.
Joe sends me stuff all the time. Him and I, we played together for years.
Yeah, he's got a good book out.
I love him, of course, man. He talks about Joe. No one lays it down like Joe Vitale.
Yep. And you know what? He is just such a solid cat, too.
Forget it. You
know what I liked about his book? It wasn't like a gossip book or anything like that. You know, it wasn't like a tell-all or I'm out here. He gave you the thing, but, you know, he didn't.
He's true blue, man.
Yep. You know,
Completely. He
didn't throw anybody out of the bus or talk out of school or anything, but it was still enjoyable that he didn't have to go down that road. And that's what I liked about his book.
He's one of the best, man. There's no question about it.
And
he's got it all. He knows how to deliver the song. Truly does. He's like Charlie Watson, more than that even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's so good.
Look, he played with the Eagles, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Loved them. Boy, he did some really good work with them. I saw one song with him, and I don't know if it was Southern Cross or it might have been Carry On or one of those songs. But they sound. Oh, I think it might have been at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I think he played with them when they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I'll tell you what, it sounded so good, and it was just like, damn, man, you step back and you go, wow.
He lays it right down, gives the song to you, man, and everybody has to follow. That's how good he is.
That's some crazy stuff. Hey, let's loop back here for a second. Let's go back to the Tomorrow Club. Who were some of the cool people, or did you ever run into some assholes down there? Like, were some of the bands really cool, or were some of them assholes?
I don't know. There's always one of those. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, I don't want to talk dirty about nobody.
Okay, yeah, I'm just talking about Joe Vitale, how he kept the book down, and I'm saying, come on, Nell, but you, I want to get some dirt.
Let me ask you about this. How about that elevator in the back on the ropes? We have to pull all the equipment upstairs. It was crazy. I can't believe we did it.
You know what? A buddy of mine had a chance to talk to Geddy Lee from Rush.
Uh-huh.
And he asked him, he says, you know, you played Youngstown, you played the Tomorrow Club pretty much. He goes, do you have any like memories or anything? And that's the one thing he said. He goes, that elevator with the load in, he says, I'll never forget it.
I'm telling you, it was like, God, 1800s.
Yeah. And Geddy Lee remembered that. That's what he remembers about Youngstown.
I still can't believe it. We didn't get hurt. Nothing fell and broke.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
It was crazy as hell, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So now you start over here on the east side, then you go to St. Christine's, and then you run it. Are there any other neighborhoods out there that had that many talented people that grew up together that hang out. I mean, I think there was
a Warren area.
Uh-huh.
But not like we were. I don't know. There was some kind of a melting pot right there that occurred. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it happened out in Warren too.
Yeah. Yeah.
A bunch of Roger Lewis. Okay. Doug Thomas. Who else was there?
Yeah, and then them guys that got together with Mom's Apple Pie.
You're right.
Boy, that was a crazy story with those guys, huh? They were together. All of a sudden, signed a record contract during this big, like, whirlwind, you know? And they were on, like, Sunset Strip and stuff. And they were opening all these shows. And it was like they'd just been together a little bit. And it was the right time, right place. And, you know, it was just they have a crazy story. That could be like you know,
that's its own, there's you know, that's,
that there. Was like a Cinderella story that
you should get Roger in here.
Oh, Roger Lewis, guys on.
He knows all the stuff.
Yeah.
He started before. I used to go up and see him at the Twin Kiss up there in Cornersburg.
Uh-huh.
They were the Poppy.
Okay.
Okay. And they did, it was not even the Poppy. It was before the Poppy. What would they call them? Executioners.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Now I know you did some work with Left End too. So where does Dennis T. Menace and all these guys fit in? Where do you fit in with them?
I think I was in the middle of doing Heartland. Okay. Me and Dale Peters, and Dale Peters was doing the engineering from the James Gang. Okay. And we were doing we just got down doing in the middle of Heartland or something. And, who called me? Jimmy Pujala called me. He said, listen, do you want to help us do this? So I sort of advised them, engineered the song, okay, and sort of put it together the way I thought it should be. And the song came out great. Cyclone Rider, man. Oh,
one of their best.
Yeah.
That song should have been a national hit. I could hear Judas Priest or anybody out there doing Cyclone Rider. Well, I mean, the lyrics, the sound, the guitars, everything about that song.
And Tommy and I worked together great. I said, John, play it like this, play it like this, play it this.
Yeah.
Bill Peters was engineering all the stuff there. It was at Secret Sound up in Cleveland when we did it.
Yeah.
It came out great.
Oh, I thought so.
And Dennis sang his ass off. He had three takes. I didn't know which one to keep.
He only did three takes. They all.
Serious.
Boy, you talk about a guy with a powerful voice. I remember we had him at the radio station one time. He stood at the back of the studio and was able to scream and peak the meter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, like we're sitting here talking now where we had the mic set for like where we are. And he went to the back of the studio and just, boom, buried it in the red.
Hey, Dennis and I went to school together, Cheney.
Oh, he's another one from the West Side. That's right.
We forgot about him, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean we forgot about him?
He's one of the best. How could you forget about Dennis T. Menace?
Oh, my God. Him and I, we all went to Cheney.
Yeah. Now, did you play at Hot Days in Idora Park and stuff back then too?
All the time.
You know, I'm trying to remember, but
yes, many times, not once.
Mm-hmm. Those were some good times there. That was another thing. You know what I liked about that? They would have the teeny bopper bands in the ballpark. You know, whoever it was, Bobby Sherman or whoever, and then the rock bands would be out there like you guys and Left End and the James Gang and the Raspberries and all these guys are out there playing in the middle of this amusement park, and we were just soaking that stuff up like sponges, man. It was just crazy. How about the Raspberries? You ever cross paths with them?
Eric Carmen approached me when we were doing the Heartland album. We wanted him to do a record with him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
But it never transpired, you know.
So. Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure you crossed paths with those guys. Back even though when like they were the choir and those, were you?
Well, Joe Walsh, I mean, Joe Vitale was in the choir.
Uh-huh.
You know, The Rain, what's that? Rain. What's that song?
Oh yeah, there's that one. Yeah, I think the Dead Boys, Steve Bader's did a version of that. That is really good. You know, that power. I love that power pop sound, man. How about Steve? You ever cross paths with Steve out there?
And I were buddies.
Were you?
Yeah, we used to hang out at the green down at the Tomorrow Club. Not Tomorrow, the green over there by
YSU.
Tony's Hideaway.
Yeah.
Right there. Me, Myron, Steve, and we'd be throwing frisbees back and forth to each other. I'm serious. We were only like 16, 17, 18. I don't even know. Something like that.
And you guys had a camaraderie back then.
Oh, sure.
Too. You know, guys, it seemed like you're like one big family, you know. You know.
Oh, it was great. It was great.
Boy, how lucky are you to be a part of all that?
Thank the Lord every day.
You know.
For all the blessings.
It is just amazing when you think of all this talent, you know, when you look at Glass Harp and you look at the Dead Boys, you look at the Michael Stanley Band. Yeah, Joe Walsh playing around here, like you say, you know, playing at teen dances in Warren and playing in bars and
all just, of us.
You know, and all you guys. What a scene. What a
melting
real scene.
Pot. Just cooking.
Yeah. Hey, let's see some of the comments we have here. Patricia Reynolds said she used to go to Christ Episcopal every week. Loved it. Saw the James gang there. And she's happy that you're on here. And Todd and Linda Kilgore checking in. That's really good to hear from them. My buddy Keith Sturgeon.
I love them.
Cyclone
Kilgore.
One of his favorite Left End songs. That song is so good. I could just hear Judas Priest or any of them, you know?
Hey, listen, we laid it down. I showed him how to lay it down.
Uh-huh.
When we got in the studio, I said, Patsy, give me that straight one. Straight four, man, right now. Okay. Pop on the E, and then Tommy, give me those chords, man. Raw. And it happened.
And see, because you've been then having some studio experience, big time experience
before that. Christ, we did Cabin Fever with Mutt Lange. He was my roommate for 3 months over in England.
Now, for people that don't know, Mutt Lange is the guy that's responsible for the sound of AC/DC's Back in Black, Def Leppard's Hysteria.
Right.
And then he married Shania Twain. Right. So all her things are like that. And all the Def Leppard.
Right.
I mean, when you look at his resume, some of the biggest albums of all times, this guy was responsible for the sound, and you worked with him.
He lived with us. We were in roommates in England, in South Wales.
So tell me a little bit about that.
3 months. He was brand new then.
Uh-huh.
He came from South Africa. Nobody knew about him then. Clive Davis from Arista Records, who was our guy, he said, this is the guy, man. And he came and lived with me, and him and I worked together great. We used to shoot down after we got done with the studio stuff per day at Rothfield. We'd shoot down to London at Trident Studios, and he was doing the Boomtown Rats, okay? Elvis Costello.
Wow.
This is brand new. He was nobody yet. This is, you know, all in the beginning.
And he's learning all this stuff, and you're hanging out there too. You're like...
Oh, him and I were
like
living together.
Wow.
I mean, every day.
So what was it about him that's he's got that because big sound? What is it?
Him
the
and
Mutt
I,
Lange sound. What's the secret to that, or what does he try to do?
We used to double up on all the tracks to make them fat, man.
Yeah,
full and fat. We do four tracks of guitars, four the same song, same notes, all the time, and then with everything, me and Bob and him and Mutt really worked hard.
I think Baby If You Want to Dance is probably one of the best guitar riffs out there. I think that's one of your best. I really do.
It's one of them.
You know,
I like Why Should Love Be This Way.
Oh, okay.
The solo on it.
Yeah.
One of my better efforts, I thought.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we did that up at Trident Studios in London. And Tim Mutt and I got along great. We used to talk about ideas. Ideas.
Yeah.
Not how to play anything, just the idea of how to deliver the song.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so I would take it you had to learn a lot from him.
Oh, yeah. Him and I, we both learned a lot. We all were learning. He was learning.
Uh-huh.
He was learning as well.
Oh, okay.
I know.
So it's like his work with you guys catapulted
started him. That was the embryo in the beginning, because he was brand new then. He just came from South Africa.
You know, boy, you think of those albums, Back in Black, Hysteria, biggest South albums of all times, and you're working with this guy.
He came up from South Africa with his dog.
Uh-huh.
And we were roommates for like 3 months.
Wow. That is crazy. I know
him inside and out.
Yeah.
I know how he is.
Yeah, that's nuts. So let's go back here. Let's see what else we got up here. Keith Sturgeon said he jammed with you at a Christmas party at the Budapest a few years back. What a super guy.
Yeah.
Joe's checking in. What's up, Joe? We should have brought Joe down, you know.
We should have.
I'll tell you, we had a good time at Rick Young's Cornrows too, man. Was that a blast?
It's always good.
That was such a great time. And
we need to support him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mark.
Yeah. Oh boy, I'll tell you. So let's go back now. Now you get the gig. Michael gives you the call. You get the gig. You join the Michael Stanley band. Now, what was the first album you were on? Heartland was the first one?
No.
Okay. Which was her first album you were on?
Cabin Fever.
Oh, Cabin Fever is before Heartland. That's right.
That's right. Cabin Fever. Then we got done with Cabin. That was with Mutt.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Then when we got off, we came back from England. Okay. We needed to add somebody for the vocals. So that's when I brought Kevin aboard. I called him. Okay. I said, Kevin, let's do it. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he came aboard, and then we were better than ever then after that.
Yeah.
And then we went to LA to do at Golden Sound, which was Elvis's studio, to do Greatest Hits.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we did all that.
Yeah.
Then after that, it was Heartland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then after that, it was North Coast.
Yeah.
Then after that, it was Misery Loves Company. No. Misery Loves Company, not the other one. Right Back At You.
Oh, right, right, right.
And then Misery Loves Company.
Right. So you
and
had
then,
a...
And then... I was working on with Michael and everybody. What's the other one? Can't Fight Fashion.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I did like 7 albums with him.
Yeah. So Cabin Fever, Greatest Hits, Heartland, North Coast, MSB.
That's the other one I forgot.
And then you Can't Fight Fashion. Yeah. With Spanish Nights. Boy, is that a good song, huh?
Michael and I wrote that in a parking lot underneath the Sunset Marquee, right below the Whiskey A Go-Go in LA. Yeah. And we just started doing it and it fell together. It was great.
City of Angels tonight under one of those freeways.
Because you know what? Maybe I shouldn't say this. He was breaking up with Libby.
Uh-huh.
And Denise was after him.
Oh, wow.
And she was one of the reps for EMI United Artists. I loved her. She's a great girl. But I love Libby, too.
Yeah.
I love Libby.
Yeah.
And it just happened. You know how people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How things go.
Yeah.
And so that fell together. And then I can't believe Denise passed away.
Yeah, you know, a little earlier we were talking about, you know, Joe Walsh and all that. I think you did to the Michael Stanley band what Joe Walsh did to the Eagles. I think your guitar propelled them into a new direction. Do you feel that?
I think I gave them a new chemistry. I brought the new game to the table. And it fell on.
Uh-huh.
Everybody came into it. And you know, it was the new sound.
Yeah.
The new sound for Michael.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think it was your guitar that drove it. So now earlier you had mentioned though, that one of the reasons of the success of the Michael Stanley band is because you guys had such great chemistry.
Exactly. You know how the Beatles or the Stones or everything that it comes together? Not that they were all the greatest players or anything like that. It's just the chemistry that came, you know? And I hope I brought that to the table.
Oh, I think you did. Yeah. I think you did.
And, you know what happened? Like, Kevin and I were roommates all these years on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he was writing He Can't Love You, which is the biggest song ever.
Right.
That song sold more than the whole catalog put together.
That's crazy.
You know, and Kevin was playing it like an R&B song. And we got in the studio. I said, hey, stop. Tommy, give me a straight four. Kids, start parting on the C. Okay? And I played the chords. Down, boom, boom, ba-dum, bam. The whole thing. It fell together in 10 minutes.
Wow.
And I said, Kevin, just start singing. And that was it.
Magic. Lightning in a bottle.
Out of nowhere.
Oh, that's
it
crazy.
It just fell together.
And then, of course, on Heartland and on that track and Lover, you had Clarence Clemons from the E Street Band. So what was it like working with Clarence and having him in there? What was that all about?
Clarence is such a pro. And he loved working with us. He thought it was the best effort he ever did. he came in and he had a trick where he would the song sheet board, you know, with the crinkle.
Yeah.
He would blow his sax into it and mic it on the other side.
So it had that metal vibrating like
rasp.
Yeah.
That raspiness that he has.
Uh-huh.
That was his key.
Oh, that's pretty wild.
It was great. And he did this on my birthday in 1980. Yeah.
And it cool, was great. Cool two cat days, to work
was,
with.
2 days he was with us. Okay. And we set him up at the hotel with his girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And you want me to tell you the rest? No.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, he came in and he delivered, man. And it was great. And he had a great time. And guess what? On Springsteen's tour that whole year, they would play our stuff with Clarence on it.
Oh, how cool is that? So,
because he was so proud of it. And Bruce did too. He thought it was great.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, have you met Bruce before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But Clarence and I worked two days together. It was great. What can I tell you? Not but beautiful. He's such a pro and a gentleman.
Uh-huh.
And right there, man, lays it down.
Yeah, I like on He Can't Love You when you're jamming and
you come in at a high C note, and then he comes blowing in.
Yeah. I mean, he
perfect.
Just,
it was perfect.
Yeah,
we put it together just like that. It was nothing.
So when you put a song together like that, what do you do afterwards? You just kind of sit there and go, "Damn," you know?
Yeah, you go, "Wow, that came out better than we thought." I mean, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. That's
what I said. Now, what about some songs that took you a long time to do? Was there a few of those, or were you guys pretty good at just banging this stuff out?
Yeah, we were pretty good, but there were some moments. There always is.
Yeah,
it can't get. It's the way it is. You get into some kind of an area where it ain't just right yet. You know what I mean? So you got to work longer at it.
And then sometimes you set it aside and then come back to it and things like that. Or this song turns into another song, or, you know what, we'll just keep these lines and use it for something else.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We lay it down, but then we would never like run away from it. We'd still try to make it shake.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got so much material that didn't get on the records in my basement.
Really?
Oh, we did all that. We did Lover and all that in my basement.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the semi tracks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Boy, Lover, what a great song, man.
Yeah.
People love that song.
Sure.
Boy, to come out with an anthem like that, too.
Yeah.
Now, what was that like playing that every night on stage?
I love it still.
Yeah.
To this day. We still do it.
Yeah.
Dunkel does a great job at it.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
You know, I can't believe Michael's gone.
Oh, that was.
I can't believe Michael's gone.
You know, this summer was like the first summer, I think, for a lot of people that they like, we didn't see Michael Stanley out anywhere. You know, him and Donnie Iris would be somewhere, a rib burn off or you name it. It seems like the Michael Stanley band became synonymous with summer in Northeast Ohio. Sure.
You know, I got to carry on the legacy.
Yeah, well, you're doing me a great job.
Me and Giz and whoever else wants on board.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the originals. Bob's, I don't know. He's in Vegas. I don't know how he's doing. I don't think he's real healthy. And same with Tommy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we ain't
Giz and I are here.
We ain't getting any younger, man, you know?
Giz and I are here, and we're going to carry it on.
No, that's awesome, man.
I'm still on fire.
You know, that's one thing about you, too. You... I think your playing skills are still very sharp. I see you play and you're out there on those stages. I don't care if you're in a bar, you're playing like you were at the Coliseum, man. I mean,
I don't know how to play any other way.
You know, I think you're really sharp.
I don't know how to play any other way.
That's nuts, man. So let's talk a little bit now. Hey, what about the time you fell off stage at YSU and broke your ribs? You know, I was talking to my brother Greg today, and I know he's watching today, and he said, he goes, the Michael Stanley band at YSU, that was his first concert. And I think that's that holds true for a lot of people in our area. If you ask a lot of people, what was the first concert you've seen? Chances are it was Michael Stanley at Struthers Fieldhouse. It was Michael Stanley at Beagle Center. And what's crazy with me is, you know, because I went to Kent State and I started there in 1975. So I kind of saw the Michael Stanley band in probably every configuration in any size hall or bar that you could possibly see them at all the way up. And I just thought that was so cool. But let's get back to you falling off the stage at Beagle. What the hell happened there?
I'm telling you right now, they turned the lights off and they were just hitting the spotlight on me. I couldn't see the end of the stage. And I was going to cut the song off, and I went over the stage and went right onto the scaffolding, over this, with my guitar. And I looked at the girl's eyes. I saw my face. I said, "Oh my God, I'm in trouble."
So you were
Michael's looking at me to cut the song off. He's up there. I got back up there. We finished the song, and they took me to the hospital. I broke 12 ribs.
Oh man. So you started the stage diving way before grunge. But actually, you know what? That does happen to people in the music business. I know Jimmy Buffett has fallen off stage. Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters. Yeah. There's a lot of people. That's almost a hazard.
I mean, I came to the edge. It was black. The stage was black, and you didn't know where the edge was, and you had a spotlight on you, and you couldn't see the end. Boom. I went over. Oh my God.
Oh, I remember that night. I remember that night as clear as a bell.
Oh my
God. I remember that like we're sitting here right now. So now you guys are out there though, and things are really starting to take off. Now you guys set the record for Blossom Music Center, 4 nights, 74,000 people. You guys, Donnie Iris, I mean, what was that like? What was the vibe? And what was it like getting on stage there every night? And you guys are just like the kings of Cleveland at this point.
It was great. I'm telling you, the magic was there. We had to give it to them, man. And we did every night and sold it out. And I told Michael, come on, let's go, baby.
Yeah.
We gave it all. Yeah, and it sold out, and the people loved it. Jesus. I'm telling you what. We sold so many T-shirts and buttons and posters. I bought a new car with it.
How about that, man?
Isn't that crazy?
But that love affair with Northeast Ohio and the Michael Stanley band, you know, what do you attribute that to? And of course, you did say the chemistry of the band, but there's got to be a little more than that.
Well, there was an affiliation. Michael and I always got along great. We wrote great together. And same with Bob, you know. And with Kevin, what am I going to tell you? We wrote a great song together. I mean, you know,
And you know what? And I think it's because there's that feel in the Michael Stanley music, you know, since, you know, look, it's you and Giz and Danny Pecchio. You guys are all from Youngstown, and Michael's mom was from East Palestine.
Right.
And, you know, then
Lindy,
you got
lives over, his wife lives in over in Poland.
Yeah. And so, you know, you had that music. So the feel that was there, it is from like us, you know, it's like, it's a Youngstown, right. Northeast Ohio feel.
Right. Yeah.
Now, how about the big gigs at the New Year's Eve gigs at the Coliseum?
I just hang from the ceiling, 80 feet high in a diaper.
They did the ball drop. You were the ball drop.
Yeah.
Your balls were dropping.
Auld Lang Syne. And guess what? That one night, Jesus, the rigger to put me was sending me up because the spotlight was on Michael on the stage. He was sending me up on the side. He hit my transmitter. Okay.
Yeah.
And it unplugged, and I'm up there. And they're calling down the countdown, and I have to play. I couldn't get it in. I'm hanging like this, trying to put the damn plug in. I just made it in time. It was, honest to God, I was, oh my God.
It was crazy.
I was going, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no.
And they're doing the countdown and you're dangling.
Yeah, I got to get it in there. And I couldn't get it in there because I was hanging on a wire, a Kevlar wire, like this. But you could pick up a tank with it.
Yeah, yeah. John Mellencamp opened for that, right? John Cougar opened for that.
Yeah.
Now that was kind of crazy for you guys right at that time, because some of these guys were like on their way, and when they would come to Cleveland, they would be the opening act.
Yeah.
You know,
Billy Joel,
uh-huh.
Foreigner,
uh-huh.
REO, keep
yeah.
going.
You know,
all those cats.
Now did they take that personal? Hey, any of those guys?
Any money? No.
Okay.
They're respectable. They were all.
Yeah.
Everybody just.
Yeah. Now, yeah, the money man. He's a cool cat, man. I miss Eddie. I felt bad when he died. I had some good times with that guy. You know.
I can't believe he's dead. Michael's dead. I can't. Come on.
Yeah,
I can't believe it. Tom Petty's gone. Yeah. What the fuck? Keep going. Excuse my French.
And Glenn Frey. I don't even want to keep going. Charlie God. Watts. Where are we?
I know. Charlie. Jesus.
I know. So.
Well, I thank the Lord every day that we're still healthy.
Yeah, yeah. Now you got all this stuff going on. You guys are touring. What do you think it was, though, that you guys didn't get over the hump? Now, you had some places where you were really strong, but in some places you didn't catch on. What do you think was behind all that?
I don't know, but I'll tell you what. We were stronger than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Don't underestimate it.
Yeah.
We did all the venues in this country many times. I mean, the biggest ones. I'm Silverdome, Astrodome, all the Greek theaters. Keep going. San Diego Sports Arena, Superdome. We played them all. But it was us, Foreigner, Journey. We did like those three tours because we were all on the charts at the same time and we were all hitting.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that was then, you know, but that was then. And we came back home and...
Yeah.
So... What are you going to tell you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a crapshoot. It's a crapshoot. You know,
you could listen. The thing is, it's really not so hard getting there. It's staying there. Staying. You got to keep coming with the hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't, guess what?
That's the toughest thing, to keep doing that, man.
Like I said.
But you guys went really far.
We came on Central Park. We played with 600,000 people there. Probably the biggest gig we ever played.
Wow.
Okay, keep going. Washington, Miami, all the way up the East Coast, Washington, up to Boston. We did all that stuff. And then over in the higher East, Minnesota, the Twin Cities, all that stuff.
I remember one time my brother had moved to Houston for a while, you know, when everybody was moving to Houston.
Auditorium.
And I remember we're in Houston and I said, hey, I'm right here in Texas. Let's ride to Mexico. Well, Houston to Mexico is a little bit far. far. Houston to Mexico is like driving from here to New York City, or maybe even a little farther than that. Right. So we said, let's go, you know. And he had his company truck, and we were driving through San Antonio, Texas, and my town come on the radio. And it was just like, it's MSB, man. You know, it's a Michael Stanley band. Oh yeah. You know? And, but, you know, it was cool to have that little taste of home in San Antonio, Texas, you know?
United Artists did a really good job. They always were supportive and always was behind us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We built as much as we could for as long as we could.
Yeah.
But like I said, you got to keep following up with another hit.
And it's amazing on how some of these guys do it. How do they keep doing it? You know, it's,
I don't know. You know what? I don't want to talk about this.
Okay.
No.
All right. No. That's fine. Then let's move on. Let's go back to now.
I know what happened.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if you don't want to go down that road, we ain't going down that road. Let's talk a little bit about, let's start talking about MTV. Now, you guys were on the cutting edge of MTV. Oh, yeah. When MTV first came out, you were one of the first videos on MTV.
Pat Benatar, and you know why? Because Nina Blackburn and Goodman and them, he just started it.
Yep.
They were friends of ours. They were from Cleveland.
Wow.
Nina was always in the backstage in the early days when we were first at the Agora.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we shifted over there. She was in there, okay? And that's how it all fell together real quick.
Now what was the first video you guys did? Was it He Can't Love You?
He Can't Love You.
Uh-huh.
In My Town. Not My Town, I mean, Take the Time.
Take the Time. That's the one with the Clint Eastwood guy. Yeah, it's not really Clint Eastwood in there, right? It's a lookalike.
Cover man.
Yeah.
That's the monkey, though.
Uh-huh. All from the Every Which Way But Loose movie.
Yeah.
So how was it shooting these videos and stuff?
Oh, it was cool. It's great fun. It took a whole day, though.
Yeah.
To hang, shoot. All the videos. And same with He Can't Love You. We did some of it in Cleveland. We did some of it in L.A. and some of it right up the coast a little bit.
And so now when you're doing those and you really don't see it all put together, were you happy how they looked once you saw them?
Yeah.
You know,
it was fun.
It wasn't like,
and then the hospital scene, you know.
Yeah.
Coming in a wheelchair and everything. That was Denise, Michael's wife.
Uh-huh.
After he left Libby, you know.
Yeah.
She was a rep from United Artists. And
You jump out of the wheelchair and you get up and start jamming and you know. Yeah, then there's the factory, right? It starts in the factory, right? If I remember correctly, it starts in the factory, and then Mike wins up
somebody
in the hospital.
Somebody got hurt, and somebody go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Kevin got hurt.
Yeah. That was a good one. That was great. You know, so that had to be a good time.
That was on all the time for like a year.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's amazing.
Same with Pat Benatar's her thing. We were all friends together. All of us.
It's amazing the impact that MTV had on breaking artists because they had so little product. All of a sudden, if you come out with a video, they were playing it 100 times a day because they didn't have any videos. And if you got in that rotation,
too.
Yeah.
That riff when I was on top of the mountain in the black coat, that was all day long for a year at least. I mean, all the time.
So that's some wild stuff, man.
How it falls.
I mean, you've been through a lot. It's just an amazing, amazing career. It really is.
It ain't over.
Yeah. And you're still going. Oh, let's see here. We got, let's see. Oh, my friend Brenda's checking in. Take the Time. She says that's her favorite song. She's listened to that 5,000 times. She said her son actually knew the words to Take the Time when he was little. She played it so often.
Yeah, I love doing that song. Yeah, I still do it. We do it.
Yeah.
Still do it.
What are some of your favorites that you like to play and that you still like to play, or, you know, when you guys were at the shows, what were some of the big
ones?
In
Between the Lines.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Lover's always one.
Yeah.
Okay. I still love doing... Somewhere in the Night. Let's get the show on the road. We still love doing that.
That's a great song.
People, they love it still.
You know, even from that album, you know, before you got into the band, Michael had a big, he had some good people on that. What, Joe and David Sanborn and people like that. And I think Joe Vitale was on that album. Exactly. And, you know.
But we still do it. But we do it like our own sort of version of
right,
it.
Right, right.
It's all good.
Solid song. Solid song. You know, the lyrics of Michael's music, I think really... It's just there's something in there. It's just good music, you know. And
listen, he's one of the greatest lyricists around. I'm telling you, all of you people out there, Michael Stanley is a great lyricist, completely.
And he was influenced by Bruce Springsteen. All my respect for those guys, all of it. Dylan, he was a big Dylan fan.
Yep.
Hey, what was the first concert you went to?
The Doors.
Really?
Public Call.
Oh, tell me about that, man. I want to hear this one.
I was scared to death. I thought he was going to turn the place upside down. And they were going to tear the place apart. He was so powerful. I couldn't believe it. He's one of those people that got that power. Like, I don't know, Napoleon or keep going. All those heavies, man. He's had that special something. He can control the whole audience and start a war or whatever.
So was that moving
that
of a
strong? I was like, I couldn't believe this guy. He was really something.
Oh, that had to be a wild show.
Yeah, it was.
I wish I was a little older because back then, man, I would have loved to have seen the Doors. I would have loved to have seen Jimi Hendrix, Janis, some of these people.
I've seen them all. Seen Jimmy at the Atlanta, Georgia Pop Festival.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Great. It was great.
Mm-hmm. So how'd you get down there? Did you hitchhike or anything? Or no. Tell me about your road trip to Atlanta to see Jimi Hendrix.
I stole my band's van. And I threw my buddies in there and we all went down there. I'm serious. It was great.
So yeah, tell me a little more about that. What was that like?
Oh my God. People were just all running around naked, jumping into these pools of orange water because it was orange, I don't know, orange mud or whatever. It was crazy.
Oh, wow.
Everybody was tripping.
And then, like, the music, I mean, who else played there besides Jimmy?
Oh, God.
Now,
a lot of them. Shit. I think what's her name?
Now, on these big shows like that, you go to which were, like, happenings, you know? I mean, they were just so big and so huge. Were you able to like get some vibes off of Jimmy and stuff, or was it just so big that it was more like the happening more than like, I would love to see Jimmy and I want to see what he's doing and I want to see.
Well, I was up close.
Oh, you were up close?
Yeah, uh-huh. But you couldn't get in there. I mean, we were young.
Yeah.
I mean, we were 17, 18.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't going to get, they didn't going to let us in, but, It was unreal, man.
Yeah.
He was great.
See, I should have been older during that because, man, you know, I was always a fan of this stuff, you know. I would always read magazines and stuff about that, even when I was, you know, well, we're not that far off in age. But we're just far enough to be, like, I wasn't old enough to go to all that stuff, you know. Yeah. I was in that, like, next wave, you know. Probably about that time I was, like, 12 or 13, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And... you know, that extra 5 years would have made all the difference. And I would have been 17, but I always see, that's how I got into the radio business because I was always interested in music. I mean, I was the biggest music fan. I had the biggest record collection you know, and I would just, because I was just so mesmerized by that. And I'd read Hit Parader and all that stuff and anything that I could see,
I,
you know,
or
wanted to see it. And it wasn't like now where you see the bands and all this. There was this certain mystique about the bands back then that you had to go see them, or maybe you'd see a picture or two.
Yeah, it was different.
You know, and now, for you to be there, that was the whole thing, man. That was the whole idea. It's not like, oh, okay, you can see now every show that Jimi Hendrix did, or the, you know, or any band that's out there now. I mean, yes, you know, you know exactly what they look like. You know the songs are going to play. You see what they are. I mean, you know, it was always a big thing to even just hear what these guys were wearing. What was Jimmy wearing?
He looked great.
Uh-huh.
Majestic, completely, and played just tremendous. I couldn't believe it. I said, Jesus, I got to do this.
Here we go. Here we go.
Yeah.
We're off to the races, man.
Yeah. Yeah, but I can't believe we. I just jumped. I said, jumped in the van, threw Joe Blumetti in there, a couple other guys, and we went down there. Man, it was like unbelievable.
Yeah, everybody talks about Woodstock, but there was a lot of these other things were bigger.
Woodstock, we broke down on 90.
Oh, yeah? What happened there, man? Give me this one, man.
I didn't make it, so I had to go to Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
That was the next show.
Got to get down to it, man.
Yeah, I did. It was Macon, Georgia.
Uh-huh. You know what? I got to look that up. I got to see who else was there that day.
I think it was...
Was that the Atlanta Pop Festival?
Yeah.
You know who else I think went there? Jack Riblett. Jack Riblett was
in
there.
The van with me.
Oh, he went with you.
Yes.
Oh, okay. There's a crazy dude. There's a rock and roller.
He's Cordesburg.
Yeah. You know what? That's right. You know, I had him on the show. And
listen, his house was right over there where that Walgreens is. That used to be his house.
Okay. What year did you go? 69 or 70?
I'm thinking 69.
Let's see what the Atlanta Pop Festival, 1969. This was the first one. It was held at the Atlanta International Raceway in Hampton, Georgia. Let's see the lineup. This might be the one. Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Booker T, Butterfield Blues Band, Canned Heat, Chicago, Joe Cocker, CCR, Delaney, Bonnie and Friends, Grand Funk, Tommy James and the Shondells.
I think it's 70.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it had to be 70. Janis Joplin was at that one, and Zeppelin was at that one. Holy shit.
I think it was 70.
Johnny Winter. Okay, let's go to the 70. Yeah, because this one doesn't say, this one doesn't mention Jimmy. So let's see what the lineup was for this thing in 1970. Okay, Atlanta Pop Festival 1970 lineup. Because Gary was a little hazy that day, as was everybody. All right, who played the Atlanta Pop Festival in 1970? Oh, the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, they were there.
Oh, don't you love the Allman Brothers? Oh. Are they badass or what,
man?
Yeah,
we played with them at, let's see, Ohio State.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that had to be a blast,
yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Wow. Okay, the Allman Brothers, Spirit. B.B. King, Procol Harum, Jimi Hendrix,
right.
Grand
that
Funk, Ravi Shankar,
yep.
10 Years After, Johnny Winter, Sebastian.
Yep.
All of them. Oh, man. And there's a picture. There's a lot of pictures here. Maybe you're in that. Is that you there naked?
In the front row, yeah.
I think Jimmy's looking at you, man. Think about that. You could be in that picture somewhere. You know, I would see pictures like that in like Time or Life magazine or something. And I would just be like 12 years old going, man, do I wish I was there? Man, do I wish I was there?
Hey, it was unreal. Unreal.
Boy, you know, you don't, and the whole vibe, I think, is different. You know, you got these big shows now like Bonnaroo and this and that and the other thing, but I don't think they had that vibe that was going on here in 1969, 1970, because everybody was more like, I think, united and like-minded or whatever. There was just something about the free spirit and the vibe, and it was all new. And these things were happening. So you couldn't plan this. Like, you know, they had some Woodstock reunions. You can't plan a happening. That's why they call it a happening, because It just happens, you know, just blows up. But that's the thing too. I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, Woodstock had the most publicity. And, but I mean, you know, you had these other big festivals going on, and you had the Dead and Allman Brothers at Watkins Glen not long after that. And then you have like the Monterey Pop Festival and then the Human Being in San Francisco before that, with the Dead and Janis and them, was like kind of the very first one. And that kind of kicked it off, but nobody really heard too much about that until like Woodstock. And then I think it took a little bit of time, but these other ones were even bigger.
That pot, man.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
That's another place I wish I could have been. Haight-Ashbury in 1969, you know, with the Dead and the Airplane and all them bands. And
Well, it was great back then.
Everything going on in Laurel Canyon with Crosby, Stills, and Nash and those guys. And
yeah, man, they were cooking the stew, man.
Yeah. Yeah,
they truly were.
And then you jump right in the pot, man. And then you're a part of that. You're a whole part of that. They couldn't keep you out if they had to.
No. Let's go.
Hey, you didn't even see how deep the water was, man. You just dove in head first.
You're right.
Oh, man. When was the first time you heard yourself on the radio? One of your songs on the radio? Any song with you on it? When was the first time you remember, or even any Michael Stanley songs or whatever?
Trying to think. I did some coconut stuff that got on the radio. Yeah, that was back in Thomas John, I think.
Oh, okay.
Put it on with Gary Ramey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, TJ, I had him on here. He's a good guy. Yeah. You know, he's a part of Youngstown rock history.
First.
Uh huh.
Had a couple 45s.
Yeah, I see Gary all the time, and I want to get him on.
He's got all the stuff in the archives up there.
Uh-huh. I can only imagine. I got to get him on the show. I see him all the time. I say, Gary, I want you to come on, because Peppermint Productions is just such a iconic space, and so much creativity has happened in that place over the years.
We, all of us cats from this area, Phil, everybody, Roger, Ting, everybody worked there with Gary.
Now, all of us. Now, in probably 72, maybe 73, I went to Wilson, and of course it was right across from Wilson, and you had the Nut House right across the street. You had Woodside. You had Woodside across the street, and then you had Peppermint Productions, and then you had the other Nut House called Wilson High School across the street there. And my buddy Ron Sabelli, his brother, was the janitor there. Mm-hmm. And so whenever he was cleaning up, he'd always let us come in there and watch what was going on, you know. So we'd be in the background or upstairs looking out that little glass window and stuff. And reading Billboard magazine, seeing what the number one songs were and all that kind of stuff. And I would go there and I would read Billboard magazine from front to back. I would just read that and check the charts and know every song and the whole thing. And some days they'd have, you know, polka bands in there or whatever. But my real
that was Del Sinchak.
Yeah. The Norchak brothers. And
God bless
him.
Thank God for Del Sinchak.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I bought our first guitars from him.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. That guy got a lot of people got their first instruments and lessons off of that guy.
I'm telling you, man.
Very influential.
Hagstrom's, Del, if you're listening. Remember those two Hagstrom's we got? He's laughing if he's listening.
So the one day Law was having their album release party.
Okay.
And we were there, and this was like my first real rock and roll experience. I tell this story all the time. I feel like a broken record, but you know, all of a sudden, all these guys like you come in at what they look like in 1971, 1972. And it was like everybody I've seen on all these newspapers and these guys at Woodstock and these bands. And, you know, you got a guy coming in there looking like David Crosby with a crazy mustache and a buckskin jacket. Then you got another guy with a giant afro and these big bell bottoms coming in all this stuff, you know. And I'm in the room with all these people and I'm like, holy. holy shit, man, I am here, you know? And then Law started jamming and it was like my first real taste of rock and roll. And
Law was a great band.
At Peppermint Productions, and it was like, oh man, I've seen guys that look like this all over the place. Now I'm in a whole room full of all these freaks and hippies, and the band is jamming. And it was like, and that really, then after that point, it was just like, damn, this is where it's at, man.
I'm going to live.
Never thought about being a DJ or anything, but you know, I was just always a huge music fan, you know?
Sure.
But that Peppermint Productions recording studio,
they recorded everybody. All of us local cats all worked through him, through Gary Ramey. God bless him.
Yep, great guy. I got to get him on here. And then I'm sure you worked with Boots Bell at some point. Oh, yeah. You got any Boots Bell stories?
We
you
did had the a... sock hops with Boots.
One of a kind there, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, man. We had a great time in the old days. This is when we were just young, just starting out, you know?
And on top of that, making money on top of it all. Not that it really mattered.
No, we didn't care about it.
Because you guys are having the time of your life. But on top of that, you know, just a little extra that, oh, by the way, you know.
We have to pay for the rental truck, right?
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah, the U-Haul.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have anything.
Then my Dora Park days, those were something else. Yeah. But you know, every show we touch on like some of the big must discuss things of Youngstown, and that's Left End, the Tomorrow Club, Idora Park, Boots Bell. Yep. You know, there's a few of them, you know, Michael Stanley Band. There's a few of them in there that you got to touch on that just really made this area for us something really special. And and kids today just don't have that anymore.
I don't know. You got to keep the faith though, man. Maybe it'll come.
Yep. Now you lived in Cornersburg, not too far from Idora Park.
No, not at all.
Do you remember the first time you rode the Wildcat? Or
it's my favorite Wildcat. I loved the Wildcat. We would go nuts on it. I was getting worried about it though. I thought I was getting old and was going to fall. The last couple of times I went on it,
a little rickety.
Well, yeah, that made it was getting all rickety. Is right.
Hey, when you got to worry about, you know, am I going to survive the end of the ride?
Yeah, we're going to make it around there. I love the Wildcat.
The Wildcat.
You know the other one. The Conneaut Blue Streak.
Oh yeah, they just tore that down. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, this guy bought the park and they were supposed to keep that stuff. They just tore it down this last week. I almost cried.
Shit.
I almost cried. I saw that, the Blue Streak at Conneaut Lake. And did you ever play up there? You had to play up there, man. Back in the day, how swinging was that? Talk a little bit about that.
We played up there with Foreigner. We played up there with Eddie Money. A couple other cats. I don't know.
Yeah. That was that place was hopping.
I love Conneaut. Yeah.
You know, and now to see it, and then when they tore that thing down and they're showing them knocking it down on TV, I really had a tear in my eye. It was like, what the hell are they doing?
You know how many times I brought up, I love the Blue Streak, but I love the Wildcat. Wildcat, I don't know. Yeah. Wildcat was quicker, I think.
Yeah, I do too. The Blue Streak, I rode it 106 times one day in a row. We did some kind of promotion up there for the radio station. I rode that thing 106 times in a row. When I got off of that, I was so beat up. I mean, towards the end, because I couldn't even hang on anymore. Because then, you know, I just go down there and I'm just sitting in that seat. I'm just flopping around like a rag doll.
Oh my God.
I'm banging my elbows into the side and stuff. by like the 75th time or even maybe the 50th, it was like, I can't even hold on to this. I can't even hold on. I'm just sitting there and they're going, keep going. You know, and then the listeners would come on and they'd ride with me and stuff. And,
Oh my God.
And then Bob Dylan played that day too. Like at the end of the night, Bob Dylan was up there.
Cool, man.
And it was a good time. But, when they tore that thing down this past week, it was like that's the end of that now, you know, when the ballroom burnt down, that was, Well, you played up there with us, didn't you?
Yes.
We did some gigs up there with Greg and Steve and them.
Yes.
Yeah. We had a good time up there.
Sure.
Especially, you know, when we were doing the Bikes, Blues, and Brews and all that. And, you know, and they really started getting that place hopping. And then, you know.
What happened?
Then the
what's his name got weird or something, huh?
The burnt place burnt down, and then it just, you know, it just wasn't the same, you know. And
I got the banner.
Do you?
with us on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had some good times at Conneaut Lake Park, even going back to being kids, though, when they had Fairyland Forest across the street.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, all
for
that.
The kids, the young kids, would love that.
Yep. A lot of great memories to that place. Oh, but sure. Boy, to see them tear down that blue streak, man. Yeah, let's see. Todd and Linda said, yeah, the blue streak was a beast, no doubt about it. Keith says his old man rode the Wildcat 122 times in a row and never got off. Oh, he got me beat by about 20. I can only imagine. And Patty says she needed a chiropractor after riding the blue streak. Hey, we got the phone lines open too. You know what? We've been sitting here talking we've been sitting here talking this whole time. I look, hey, maybe we should give the phone numbers out here. We're almost done. Okay, go ahead. Don't go too far away. I don't know. I think Gary's just walking out on me. I don't know. Hey, we are talking with Gary Markaski here this afternoon or this evening. Hey, if you want to give us a call, 330-595-1600. I got to blame this on my producer, Joe. He didn't even hold up a little piece of paper or anything. Hey, pick up the phone. Give out the numbers. And he's a talk show host. Joe, aren't you supposed to be saying, pick up the numbers?
Rolling. I want to get
into
that. No way, man.
Are we having fun yet or what, man?
Stuff right there.
Oh, yeah. That's why, you know, I love these guys because they've all been, you know, rubbing elbows with all these different people and, you know, crossing paths with everybody. I mean, you hear Gary and just playing these big gigs and, you know.
What would it be like just to hang out with that level of talent? That would be amazing.
You know, Joe Walsh is, you know, Joe Walsh, you know, this guy, you're friends with Pat Benatar, you know, and you're all like a family and, you know, you've been out on the road for 2-3 years and, you know, working with all these different bands and stuff out there. But, is Gary coming back?
I don't know. What did you do, man? What did you say?
Did I say something? Oh man. Yeah. Okay, the phone lines are now open. Yeah, that's radio jargon.
Yes.
You know what today is, too? Today is National DJ Day.
Nice. How'd you celebrate?
I haven't yet. This is my peak right here, you know. Cup of espresso, you know. That's about
I even laid out some beers for you, but I figured you'd fall asleep if you started downing some beers.
Who died on this date? In 1965, Ellen Freed passed away. And Ellen Freed, legendary DJ, and he's the guy that hey, where'd you go? Uh-oh. What do you got there, man? He's back. I like how we're all bundled up here, man. We all got our stocking hats on and stuff. It's like we're going to go live under the bridge. I do not like the cold, man. Oh, you got some posters here. Oh, okay.
This is with us. Me, Marty, Joe.
Here, how can we, let's put these up here somehow. Which camera should I put these on, Joe? All right, this here's a poster. This is from the Ohio Rock Legends. Gary Markaski, Chris Winthrop, Joe Vitale, and Marty Lee Hones. And Marty, of course, plays with Donnie Iris. Joe with... It's just about everybody. Joe Walsh, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Peter Frampton, you know, Neil Young toured with the Eagles on The Hell Freezes Over. And this is a very cool poster here. You can see that if you're watching. Now, if you're just listening, you can't see that. But that was a heck of a night. What songs did you do that night? What was some of the material you did?
We did Michael Stanley hits.
Uh-huh.
Joe Walsh hits. Eagles hits and the Donnie Iris hits.
Oh, okay. Now you and Donnie got to be tight, right? You guys have worked with.
We go back when he was in the Jaggers at Tony's Hideaway down right next to the green.
Yeah.
Where the Bavarian house is.
Right.
That's how far we live.
You know, that was always a summertime staple. Donny Iris and Michael Stanley Band. That was always something here that yep. Here's a poster here. This is you and Joe Dunkel right there. Nice one there. This here is the Gary Markowski project here, a little bar poster here for you.
There's, look at this guy.
Oh man. Oh, who drew this one for you? Boy, that picture came out real good. A nice caricature of Gary's band right now. That came out really good, man.
Didn't it?
Yeah. 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 So what do you got coming up, man? Where are you playing? Where are you going? Where are you headed? What places you got going?
JR's Pub, Long Boys.
Get on the mic, man. You're a little.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Come on. If you know, you'd think that somebody that worked with Mutt Lang would be like, I was a little nervous that you were going to come in here and start looking and checking levels and, you know.
If you ain't got it together.
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah, forget it, man. Right.
No, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I just thought I'd show you some of these.
Oh, these are for me.
Want to keep them?
No, I don't want to take your posters, man.
I'll tell you what. Let me make copies.
Yeah, there you go. So,
how about me and Jill?
Oh, there you go. I love Jill, man.
You know, where's this at? This is Connie at.
Jill. Yeah, that is. Yes, that is. I didn't take that picture, did I?
You might have.
I might have. Yeah, I could tell just by the trellis in the background. I knew that was Connie out right off the bat. Oh, thank you. Yeah, Jill Carmichael. Boy, what a fun person, too. Me and Jill have had so much fun with Special Forces over the years. You know, down at the parlor in Niles and, you know, at the bowling alley in Wedgwood and stuff like that. Those were some good times, man. Those were some good times.
Yeah, for sure.
But man, everybody seems to be liking the show.
Yeah, they do.
Miller Murph, he says it must be cold up there with the stocking caps and the sweaters. Ha ha! You know what, Miller? Be quiet, Murph. We don't want to care. We don't care what you think.
I'll take it off.
No. Hey, oh, that's one. One of your famous characters. When you look on the back of the Cabin Fever album, you're the ant. Tell us a little bit about the ant and how this come about.
My God, here's what happened. I don't know what happened. It was Halloween, and I dressed up like him. We were playing Hiram College, okay, Michael's home base college, and they loved it. So next thing I know, Jules Belkin, he told me, "This is it. This is the back of the cover of the Cabin Fever album." You know, and I dressed up like that. And I did it at Mike Belkin's house, right in his back room. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, hey, if you could look that up, Joe, if you could find the Cabin Fever album, the Michael Stanley Cabin Fever album, we got to look at the back of that. Now, you guys are what, sitting around playing cards, and you're in like these goggles and a Speedo and like suspenders.
Yes, right. It works. Yeah. And Jules Belkin loved it. He said, "This is it. This is going to be the cover, the back cover."
Yeah, there's the front cover. We got to find the back cover. Yeah, let's see. We'll find
it. There somewhere.
We'll find it. But as we had said several times on this show. Yeah, there it is, right there.
Get the middle.
You see him? It's that middle one on the right-hand side.
Pop it up.
Yeah, here it comes. Gary Markowski as the ant.
Listen, there's pictures right out there right now that somebody posted me hanging 80 feet high at the Coliseum, Richfield.
You got that hat on? A goggle with one sunglass in it, and
that's the guys running away. Thank you, Bob.
You got that black and white portable TV there and stuff. That is just so funny. Well, because of the front of it at first, it's like you guys are sitting there watching TV and doing whatever. And then you flip it over and there's the ant.
Cabin fever. That's what it is.
Drove you right over the top, man.
Yeah. The truth.
Going over the top and you are synonymous. Now, when you're playing, you know, what's your approach to a guitar solo? When you're writing these guitar solos and coming up with that kind of stuff and everything, what was like your approach to, you know, what are you thinking when you're doing a guitar solo? How do you figure out what you want to do or where you're going?
You try to capture the feel of the song, and then you give the passion and the proper notes to it, you know. And you sort of know, because you've been playing for so long, what the song calls for. And that's what it's all about. Yeah. You give him that. And with all the, you know, the love and heart and soul and blood to the song. Yeah. And that's what I try to do.
So with you, it's all feel, like you say, all heart and soul. Yeah. And you learn how to play just by listening and
I know it out of here, but I can read, but I don't really need to. Yeah. I don't need to.
Yeah.
I just automatically feel it and hear it. All I have to do is hear it.
Uh huh. Oh, that's really good. That's really good.
And I deliver.
Yeah, you do. You do.
I do. I'm telling you.
You know what?
And guess what? I know it.
Nothing wrong with it. No, you're not lying.
I'm confident.
You got to have confidence, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know what the song needs. And then I add to it, you know. Sometimes it could be too much sometimes, but I back off. It depends.
And see, and that's important when you're playing with a band too, right? Because you're always listening to everybody else and you're all tuned in to each other.
You have to be a team. Okay, you see where we're going? Okay. Take it there.
Mm-hmm. And then when you play with people long enough, you know exactly where you're going.
Right.
But also by the same token, though, but then you want to keep it a little fresh. So when you go somewhere in a little different direction, you don't want to want to get in that rut where you just play the same thing.
Everybody has a different feel. If you're playing with other cats, you know, you give them what they're calling for. You can feel it. And you just know it. I've been playing for 55 years.
Yeah. Well, that's why I say I've seen you just jump up on stage with people and, you know, and other guys too, that have that ear and have that gift that you just jump right in there. You know exactly what chord they're playing. And then you're just like, you know, whatever the rhythm is or whatever, or you've got to get a little lick or something. You're right there. Just know how to do it.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
I know exactly where they're going.
Yeah. That's because you didn't start just yesterday. You've been around. And that's why I say when I come out and see you at the bars and everything, you're playing that guitar just as if you were at Richfield Coliseum or if you were at Blossom Music Center in front of 20,000 people.
That's, I don't know how to do it any other way.
And I stood there. I've seen you too, man. I just see you. You're just like, man, you just go.
Let's go.
I hear you. I hear you. Well, you ready to wrap this up here? Did you have some fun here today, Gary? are we going to have to come back and try it again?
We'll have to try it again, but I mean, this is tremendous.
Oh, this was just so awesome, man. I've been wanting to get you on, and you know, you have such great stories, and just to live that life and to just meet all the people that you've met, and you know, rubbed up against.
There's still more.
And yeah, we ain't done. Yeah, we ain't done.
It ain't over.
Yeah. Yeah, we ain't done. We ain't done. All right. Well, listen, man, thanks for coming out. Even coming out in the cold. And so where are you guys playing so we could send everybody out to see you?
Oh, shit. I think we're at JR's Pub coming up. I'm not sure what the date is. We're at Long Boys up in Champion.
That's a good place. Okay.
Yeah. And there might be something coming up with the reunion.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but I'll let you know about that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And next time we got to get Giz down here, and
I try to get Giz.
We'll bring Ting down here.
Sure.
And, you know, let's get together. Maybe Jack Riblet, and he'll fill in some blanks. He might. Jack Riblet might have a couple of blanks on that Atlanta Pop Festival that you might have not really remembered, or you don't want to share. You don't want to incriminate yourself.
You think? What did I do? Get naked?
I don't know. I wouldn't doubt it. Would I put it past you? No. I know. I think if I was 17 years old at Monterey, I keep wanting to call it Monterey, but.
Listen, you wouldn't have believed this. There was this trench of orange water where these guys were all naked and jumped in them. I couldn't believe it. It was crazy. And we're all looking at it as, what?
Yeah. What? Hey, hold my pants. I'll be right back.
It was crazy.
Oh man.
Orange water.
You can only imagine what was in that water. Serious. You got 500,000 people in Georgia in this field.
It was nuts. Jack will tell you.
Yeah, you know, now because I'm sure there wasn't a vast array of porta-johns and concession stands and stuff that.
There wasn't enough.
Yeah, I would figure. Yeah, back then, man, they didn't know what to expect with these things or where you would find that many porta-johns or whatever. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, listen, let's wrap this up. I'm going to come out and see you here. Maybe I'll come out the Long Boys, and you always have a good time when you're out, and the band always sounds good.
JR's Pub, it's coming up this next week, I think.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so that sounds good, man. That sounds like a plan. So Gary Markowski, Michael Stanley Band, Coconut, all these other bands, the Pride of Cornersburg. Good to talk to you, brother, and thanks for coming down, man. I love you.
I love you.
And, you know, we always have a good time together, man.
I love you, brother.
Hey, we need a round of applause here. We need a standing ovation after this one. Where's the
Fast
crowd?
Freddy?
Hey!
I love him. There you go.
Come on, Joe.
One of these buttons.
All right. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow, 3:00, Y103. And what more can I say? Thanks, Gary. Awesome time, brother.
Wasn't it good?
Love you, man. Yep.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.